Executive Director of the Agricultural Utilization Research Institute. Those of us legislators know it as ORI. And Kim Nelson, one of our great Minnesota businesses. Kim is the Senior Vice President of External Relations at General Mills and the President of its foundation. I invite each guest to make their presentation, starting with Teresa, and then we'll move on to questions.
Along with this presentation, but yes, again, I am, oh, one of the things of being 5 feet tall. And I just want to say, yeah, again, I am Teresa Spaeth, and I'm the Executive Director of the Agriculture Utilization Research Institute. I, too, hail a home in Bemidji, proud that Bemidji is being very well represented today in innovation. But again, AURI, what is an AURI? For the past 20 years, we have focused on helping small to medium-sized businesses take research and move it to commercialization. Specifically for us, it's the area of agriculture. We have expertise in food, so I do know I'm standing between you and lunch. We have expertise in bio-based materials. That would be anything in terms of petroleum replacement, things coming again from agriculture products, renewable energy, and what we politely call co-product utilization. Some of you may know that as waste utilization, or in other words, turning one man's trash into another man's treasure. So what? Why should you care about that? Well, in the past biennium, we too measure our world in biennia. We worked on 325 projects. Again, those are projects specifically working with small to medium-sized businesses, primarily in rural communities that may not have access to some of the same services that they do here in the metro area. Of those 325 projects, 143 of them were able to move products or processes to some form of commercialization. That may not always mean that they're on the shelf in Target, as some of our products are. That may mean industrial uses or increased efficiency or effectiveness or consulting, but 143 of our projects in 2 years moved forward. Most importantly, though, to you and relating to the subject today is, those projects resulted in an additional $123 million of capital investment. And you might say, so what? In rural Minnesota, $123 million of capital investment means wealth creation, and wealth creation does mean job creation for us. So that's a significant measure, at least for our organization. What have we learned? What do we want you to understand today that is so important? First of all, we have learned that these projects take a journey. There is no leapfrogging from research to access to capital and commercialization. There is a journey that every business must take, and it's not easy. They need to understand their product, how they're going to make it, where the supplies are going to come from. They need to understand their market, and they also need to understand the business plan or the model that they're going to use to move forward. Why do they need to know that? Because when they do that, the benefits they receive are reducing risk. When that risk is reduced, what happens? They're more attractive to investors, right? More people are interested in looking at their company. They have a much greater likelihood of succeeding in the marketplace. We all know it's a global world out there today and takes a lot to compete. And most importantly, especially to us in rural environments, they achieve a longer-term sustained competitive position in the market. All very important. Again, all three of these factors work together to create jobs. This is, you have a handout for this too. For those of you who are interested in economic development, when we talk about understanding product, market, and business and moving from research to commercialization, this is the journey that they must take. And again, I just put this up here for you today because it's complicated. It's not easy. You can't just invest in research today and tomorrow spit out some commercialization. Businesses need to consider all of these stages and all of these factors to be successful. What do we know about that, and why is that important, and what are the most important outcomes that we know of? We know that the businesses that we work with, if they pay attention to that journey and they do move that research to commercialization, their ideas have been vetted and proven, again, in the product, the market, and the business model world, 95% of our clients have achieved access to capital and move forward. Again, 95% of our clients that take that journey and they have a good idea that has been vetted and reduced their risk and proven the idea, access capital, move forward, and eventually create jobs. I would be remiss, of course, the Agriculture Research Institute. Agriculture is our main thing. You'll see a handout in there. I'd like to remind all of you, agriculture is 20% of our state's GDP. Production agriculture alone generates about a $16 billion industry, but when you add value to that here in Minnesota, that's a $55 billion industry, and you'll see it in one of the handouts you should be receiving. That industry has much more potential for growth. We see a lot of that in rural opportunities, and you'll see anything from snack foods to bio-based materials moving forward. Again, taking that research to commercialization makes a prosperous Minnesota for all of us. What can you do? One of the questions we were asked in preparing for this presentation is, why should you care? And as legislators, what could you be doing to help businesses move from commercialization or research to the commercialization? First and foremost, an alignment of programs. We need to make sure that what we're doing is moving folks along a continuum and not focusing on or creating situations for leapfrogging. Research does not automatically turn into commercialization. Again, in funding research, and I see Senator Dames there, he's on our board of directors, he can hold our staff accountable for this. Every single time we bring a research project forward, in our world, it's with the intent of economic benefit. We require our staff to put a dissemination plan in place to make sure that that research doesn't sit on the table, and we require them to have a development plan, which means when we find out the results, if they're positive and they will have a benefit to Minnesota, there's a plan in place from the day that research starts to move it to commercialization. That's a huge factor. A lot of times we forget, we get excited about the research, conduct the study, find out the information, and it sits on the shelf. And I've heard a lot of people talk about that. So up front, when you're funding these kinds of projects, if you intend economic benefit, it might be a good idea to say, what's your dissemination plan, and how are you gonna move that through the process of development to commercialization? And then finally, a little plug for something that's near and dear to me. Go back to your districts. One thing, as some of you might see in my bio, I have been studying innovation and entrepreneurship at a doctoral level. One thing I know is communities that create a platform for excitement and idea generation have a much higher probability of success in economic development. So get excited. I'll show you some research projects that we do. We publish, hopefully annually now, some opportunity documents that compile, in our area of expertise, food, bio-based materials especially. We compile what we know in trends, and most importantly, in the back, we take a list of things that you could do to encourage and excite your communities. And we encourage all of you to go back, whether it's agriculture or medical devices or the things that are most important to your community, provide a platform for positive communication, because we have a lot to offer in the state of Minnesota, and we can move forward together. So those are some of the recommendations we have for you today. And I look forward to standing for questions and comments, hear what you have to say about this topic. So thank you so much for giving me the opportunity today.
Well, good morning. I'm the last speaker before we all get a break, finally. And my name's Kim Nelson. I work for General Mills, and it's really a delight to have a chance to address you as you contemplate the theme of this year's legislative conference, One Minnesota, Our Future, Our State. And what I'm hoping to bring is simply a large employer's perspective on the challenges that we face, and the challenge in particular of job creation. And what I want to do is provide the context of today's business reality to your thinking and to your conversation. And that context is, of course, the global context. And, you know, as you think about the business environment that we're operating in right now, everything is shaped by the global market. So our global commodity markets shape General Mills' input costs for manufacturing. Our global consumer markets provide tremendous demand for all of our products. And of course, global talent is competitive with local talent for a company like ours. So what I want to do to put a fine point on why globalization is so critical as Minnesota really thinks hard about how do I bring jobs into this state, I want to use our company, General Mills, as an example. So General Mills is a company that most of you out there know well. We are truly homegrown. We're as Minnesotan as it gets. We've been around for almost 150 years, and the milling industry that our founders created was really the catalyst for the growth of Minneapolis. So we are as local as it gets here. You know us well because you consume our products. So my guess, you know, my hope is that many of you maybe had, you know, have had some variety of our Cheerios over the years. I'll bet you've had Green Giant vegetables or had a Pillsbury Crescent roll or baked some Betty Crocker brownies. And maybe as you left home this morning, you grabbed a cup of Yoplait yogurt or maybe a Nature Valley granola bar. So you know us deeply, intimately, because we're in your pantry. I see some heads nodding and some heads shaking out there. That makes me nervous. So there may be a part of our company, though, that you don't know or that you're less familiar with. So, for example, we're the sixth largest food company in the world, and we are globalizing rapidly. If you think about our business, you know, we employ about 30,000 people globally, and fully 40% of that employee base is actually outside of the U.S. And it's interesting because our second largest group of employees is actually in China. The first, of course, is our headquarters here in Minnesota. Our fastest growing business is actually selling dumplings to consumers in China who are just as stretched for time as we are here. And I would say our largest business outside of the U.S. is a business we don't even sell. We don't even operate in the U.S., and it's Häagen-Dazs ice cream. Our second largest customer in the world isn't, you know, Walmart's first. You might think it'd be Kroger. It's actually Carrefour. It's a French retailer. And if you think about our strength abroad, we're the largest pasta manufacturer in Argentina, and we're the number one Mexican food company in Australia. So we are deep in this, and that globalization will drive our company's growth, and it will drive the growth of so many other employers in the Twin Cities. So we have to have this perspective as we think about jobs, job growth, and job creation. So at this point, you're probably thinking, that's marginally interesting, Kim, as we look to head to the doors here. But why is globalization good for Minnesota? You know, why is this a good thing? And be honest with me, wouldn't you say that globalization means less investment for Minnesota? Isn't that the reality? And I would say not necessarily. And I just give you a couple of examples. You know, we use the same Duluth grain elevator that we've used for decades to collect as a collection point for our grain all over the state. And we ship that grain out of the same Duluth port we've been using for decades. We just ship it globally now. And we have the same agricultural research facility in Le Sueur, Minnesota that we've had again for decades. And, you know, it's as important to us as it's always been for developing new seed hybrids. It's just that those hybrids are now being used by farmers in China to satisfy global food demand. So globalization doesn't necessarily mean that there's going to be this massive disinvestment in the state. And I guess it's just important to know that, like it or not, our future will be profoundly shaped by these global forces. And that's the company's, General Mills' future, but it's Minnesota's future as well. You know, I'll throw out another example. Many of you have heard about Target's expansion into Canada. You know, is that a good thing or is that a bad thing or is it neutral for Minnesota? Well, it's a fantastic thing because as Target moves up into Canada, now you're going to have all these Canadian food companies and consumer product companies looking towards Minnesota to relocate resources so that they can service the Target account, just like General Mills has resources in Bentonville, Arkansas to support Walmart. So globalization, if managed well, can be a tremendous growth driver for our state. Let's talk about growth. Let's talk about job growth. I would say there are three things that are really important to stimulate job growth and enable job creation for our employers in Minnesota. The first one is a well-educated, diverse workforce. The second is a financially stable and efficient government. And the third is a business environment that truly supports business in our state. Let me touch briefly on each of these. So the business community is just a voracious consumer of the output of our educational system in Minnesota. And to be honest with you, we love hiring graduates from our Minnesota colleges and universities. They don't seem to mind our winters, and most importantly, it's a lot more efficient than relocating talent from out of state into Minnesota. But, you know, I'd be lying if I didn't say we're as concerned. I think Inez earlier mentioned it. We're concerned when we look at the fact that 70% of all of our jobs by 2018 are going to require some sort of post-secondary education, and yet we have our high school graduates taking 6 years, you know, getting 36% of them through in 6 years. This is concerning. And, you know, frankly, we're alarmed by the difficulty that we seem to have as a state in educating our low-income and particularly our minority children. I mean, this is a problem for us. You know, as we look to the future, we wonder if we can't, if our population is changing in a way that we're diversifying as a state, but we're struggling to educate this important resource, natural resource, in our community, you know, how are we going to bear the costs of increased healthcare costs, increased social services costs? How are we going to bear the cost of a greater penal system? I mean, this is a concern to us. And I will tell you, you should be aware that businesses like ours actively invest to recruit diverse populations of employees to come in. And we do it because innovation is the lifeblood of a business like ours. And we know that diverse perspectives fuel innovation. And so this is a priority to us, and we've invested tremendous resources to create work environments that leverage the talents and skills of all sorts of diverse populations, whether it be our global employees relocating into the Twin Cities for a rotation, or whether it be our U.S. ethnic minorities, whether it be our LGBT populations. We want them all to be able to develop and contribute their gifts to make our country, our company, stronger. So we'd urge you to partner to continue to advance the education reform that we saw in the last session. We were really thrilled with that, and we think there's a lot more there on the table, and we hope you seize this opportunity to push it through. The second condition that I talked about that supports job growth in Minnesota is financially stable, efficient government. And here, I would just say that it is clear to us, we're hoping it's clear to you, that healthcare costs left unchecked are really going to swamp our budget. They're a real threat to the stability, I think, of our financial system here in Minnesota. And I will tell you that as a company, we have invested tremendous resource, tremendous effort in driving down our own healthcare expense. So we've innovated in the area of prevention, we've innovated in the area of more outcome-based payment versus paying for activities and services, paying for outcomes. And as a result, we've been able to reduce our healthcare expense to 10% lower than the corporate average. So we would just encourage the state to really address this issue holistically and with a plan that can significantly change the trajectory that we are on. And I know that the health exchange is controversial, but I'd be remiss if I didn't say we stand with other large employers, and we just feel like we really need to construct a health exchange that works for Minnesota. We have a lot of knowledge and leadership. We have a rich legacy here, and we really don't want something imposed from the outside that doesn't work for our state. Government must also be an efficient user of our tax dollars. And here we're excited about the bipartisan efforts to make government more efficient. We're actually excited about any bipartisan efforts. We think they're really important. And I would say here also, you know, private sector, just using our company as an example, we've stripped out $1 billion of expense, operational expense, leveraging lean principles that, frankly, were initiated in our manufacturing sector, but we've applied them to our administrative processes. And it's been a powerful driver of elimination of waste. And we are excited and energized and would invite and encourage continued exploration of some of what the business sector has learned about how do you get rid of redundancy, how do you get rid of duplication, how do you get rid of processes that don't need to be there anymore, and we stand ready to help as you tackle that. The third thing I want to touch on is the need for creating an operating environment that truly supports business. And here, I think, again, you know, great bipartisan work on permitting. We think that's terrific. And again, I hope you start this session out from that standpoint of where are these opportunities. Minnesota is a fabulous place to live. It's got a tremendous quality of life, and we love it here. But there is no getting around that this is an expensive place to do business. You know, we had speakers this morning talk about the taxes, and, you know, we've got the fourth highest corporate tax rate in the country here. And, you know, it's you know, companies like ours with deep roots, we grin and bear it, and we're happy to do so. But we really have to think realistically and honestly about how attractive this state is for new businesses to consider relocating in a world of global options. So the real question is, I think, not, you know, what's our tax rate versus, you know, Iowa or Michigan. It's really more about how do we attract and nurture the next 20 Fortune 500 companies to locate their headquarters here in Minnesota. So I'll just close along these lines of attracting new businesses to Minnesota by making sure that all of you are aware of an exciting new initiative. It's called Greater MSP. It's led by Mike Langley, who did this sort of work attracting businesses in Pittsburgh. And it grew out of a task force that our CEO, Ken Powell, chaired with Marilyn Carlson Nelson to stimulate job growth. And I think Greater MSP has created a dynamic, exciting vision for regional economic growth. And they'll be playing this coordinating role, acting as a one-stop shop for anyone who wants to do business in Minnesota, which we've sorely needed. And, you know, actually having one place that can frame our business proposition in the best possible light, you know, yes, we have some challenges, but there's a lot of good things too, I think is critical for really attracting these businesses to our state. So I just want you to know the business community is deeply committed to the success of Greater MSP, and I think this kind of public-private partnership is a great example of how our public and private sectors can work together to create jobs in Minnesota. So I'll leave you with the thought that I think the key to addressing many of these challenges and opportunities I've touched on is, in fact, partnership. And I think that your role as creating an environment where job creators can succeed is absolutely critical. And as you embark on this new session, it would be our hope that somehow you'd find a way to work together to find common solutions for these really important problems that our state is facing. And, you know, I love the theme because it's true. We have our differences, but in the end, we are one state, and our future is shared. So please seize this tremendous opportunity to truly serve the state by finding the points where different agendas overlap, and they are there. And please find ways to drive change through these rare, rare openings and really drive the collaboration that we need to advance our state. So thank you very much and look forward to questions.
Anybody want a lesson on tax policy? Okay, this is an Ori question. I need an example of a specific product brought to market from how the people with ideas connect with you and how you help them develop the product and market it.
Certainly, probably one of the most popular when you think about something on the shelves at Target would be pet care systems and Sweet Scoop kitty litter. That project has about 15 jobs in Detroit Lakes, Minnesota and growing every day. How did we help them? We take the formulation into our pellet mill facility and help them design when they're developing the new products using wheat to make kitty litter. We help them look at those processes and develop and formulate the products. That's one clear example of retail. A few other examples, one we're working on right now that promises somewhere between 10 and 20 jobs in southwestern Minnesota is, you may have heard of Centava. It's a development of what we call purple corn. And what have we helped them do? We provided some seed money for them to research the extraction of dye. What this product promises to be is it's a purple corn where the corn itself is a differentiated market for food, and then the stalk and the husk actually can be mined for red dye, for a natural red dye that is petroleum replacement for red dye number 40. We help them formulate, look at some of the, provide some research dollars. That particular piece of research was more expensive and needed a higher thing than we could do in our laboratories. So we partnered with the Minnesota corn growers to do more significant research to help them develop that product. Once we moved into product development, we knew the product was feasible. We are now in the process of helping them work through some of the fine details of application and then access other individuals that do things like business planning and market planning so that they can start to look at site selection in southwestern Minnesota to develop develop an agri-processing facility down there.
Question number two for, I guess, both of you. How important is investment in infrastructure, transit, roads, higher education, et cetera, in supporting business?
Well, I talked a little bit about education. I would say that it is mission critical, really. I mean, that's what we need. We have to have employees, future employees, to staff our company. And we want them, it's better if they're from Minnesota. So I would put that at the very, very highest level as a priority. I would say education and healthcare are just two big challenges that we have got to address, and we have to address them definitively.
Another piece of infrastructure that's important to us, of course, is transportation. There's several issues. The conditions of rural roads and our ability to move product are highly important. Again, education, youth. We don't want to lose any more youth in rural communities, so we have to have good educational opportunities that provide higher-paying jobs for rural Minnesotans. So absolutely critical.
Both speakers, please address local urban agriculture, which is blooming and could create both good jobs and local good food.
I'm going to let you do that.
Says both speakers, sorry.
Both speakers. For more information, I would call your attention to a report that we did. It's about 2 years old now, called Green Jobs in the Food Production Sector. There is tremendous opportunity to bring more awareness. Local foods does bring opportunity to the state of Minnesota in a very diverse agriculture market that we have here. I do think there is promise. I love to see local efforts, if anything else, to help individuals become more aware of healthy eating. I think that offers opportunity there. I think it brings communities together. We do have a few projects. Northern Minneapolis, we help an organization called Kindred Kitchen take some of those local products and turn them into healthy, nutritious food products in there. We have two scientists that go there once a month to help and address some of those issues. And we are seeing market potential in some of those areas. But they do tend, I will say, to be more niche markets than they are broad scale like we see with commodities.
Kim, any thought?
I was just going to say, and of course our company works with large commodity markets versus the local urban agriculture, but I guess I would tell you, we think it's important, and we have initiatives. We've been very, very engaged in the Hunger Free Minnesota initiative and on a leadership level, and a piece of that is sort of supporting local agriculture, and so we do think there's a place for it. And then even on our facility, for example, we created this agricultural strip that's farmed by our employees, literally to give food to the community. So, you know, I'd say our local urban agriculture perspective comes at it more from a philanthropic standpoint. And, you know, we of course are dealing in large commodity markets for the commodities that we use to make our products.
Given the global economy and our need for a workforce ready to help more companies become global suppliers, How can we help nurture the realization that our foreign-born population is an asset our companies will need and want?
I think that's a great question. And I think understanding the value of our immigrant populations and, you know, this kind of gets to the notion of what are our assets in the state. And I think there's a huge opportunity to embrace the entrepreneurial potential of many of these immigrant populations and to create policies that support their business ventures. We haven't spoken a lot about entrepreneurism, but I think that is a huge area. It was one of the three areas that came out of the Itasca job creation task force that I mentioned a little bit earlier. One of them was supporting entrepreneurism in Minnesota. So I do think that there's a tremendous need to really think about how does the state support these efforts.
One more. Some people are concerned about Minnesota's business climate, yet we are home to the most Fortune 500 companies per capita in the country. Why do you think this is?
And again, I think I addressed it. We love Minnesota. It's a great state on many levels. We have had a very highly educated workforce. You know, we have challenges, but we're not like many states. We are starting at a position of strength in many of these areas. You know, as much as we see where healthcare is going, we are perceived as a leader nationally in healthcare, and we have great health outcomes relative to other places. Does that mean they are good? And does that mean that they are sustainable? And the answer is no. Same with education. We are perceived as a leader in many areas, but we have these challenges that are coming that we're really going to need to address. So as I said earlier, I think for legacy employers, you know, your Cargills, your Medtronics, you have these employers who have been here. We're born and bred Minnesota, and, you know, this is where we live and we love this place. The real focus and thinking should be about, in a global context, how are you going to get the next 20? How about the next 5? How are we going to nurture them? How are we going to create policies that make it interesting for them to think about Minnesota? And I think companies looking at this state will see many of these tremendous benefits, but we can't let them erode. We can't, because our population is changing, we can't lose our edge in 10, 15 years on having this highly educated workforce. So that's the work I think that's before us, is preparing for the future that, you know, in a world that's changing rapidly.
Thank you. That concludes this panel, and I'm told to remind you to please all stay after lunch. After lunch, there are going to be some breakout sessions where people are going to roll up their sleeves and try to craft some bipartisan proposals that can be brought forward. So we're coming back at what time? Noon to 1:30? 1:30 back where? 1:30 where? 1:30 back in this room. Your table for lunch is on your name badge.